I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. With me today in the St. Ambrose of Milan studio are the usuals. Father Garrett Burns.
Here I am.
The always disgruntled Father Drew Hoffman.
I'm not going to comment this time.
But for the first time in this show's history, we have a guest, and not just any guest. This is the 11th episode, and conveniently, we have the 11th bishop of the Diocese of Wichita with us today, Bishop Carl Kemi. Welcome, Bishop.
11th bishop. That's right. That's right.
You think we planned it?
Yeah, yeah. Good use of Wikipedia.
Actually, I think I'm really the 10th.
I agree.
Because the first bishop didn't even get here.
Right.
Wasn't ordained. He was appointed, but he didn't get here. He died on the way. But if you count him, I'm the 11th. But if we don't count him, I'm the 10th. So
this is something they would argue about on Sports Talk radio. Like to fill an hour on Sports Talk and see the 10th or the 11th bishop.
I actually have very strong opinions about this.
I'm going to have the exact opposite opinion of you once I hear what your opinion is.
I prefer even numbers. So.
Yeah, there you go. I like that.
I do believe you are the 10th bishop because the diocese did not even exist when he was named bishop. So the diocese wasn't created till after that man was dead. But some historian who wanted to be charitable decided to count him as the first bishop of the diocese. Fake bishop.
Fake news.
So even in my conference room, which we have all the pictures of the bishops, we have no picture.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. Good. Get him
bishop
out of here.
Elect Riley.
Today, we are rewriting history.
We made a commitment to this take. I love it.
I am officially the 10th.
Yeah, there we go.
Let it be written, let it be done. Now, this is not your first time on a podcast, Bishop, if I'm correct. I believe you've been on the Father Capon podcast, The Foxhole.
Yes.
Where you talked about the family and St. Joseph, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been on Kanza Catholic? Have you been on that one?
Not yet. We still need to get you on.
Wow, I wish someone could invite him if we knew someone that
there's
was a part of that.
There's a lot of things moving, and there's moving pieces, and it's a complicated thing, and so...
Actually, I'm quite selective about which
yeah. I'll tell you, we had Bishop Vinky on, and we asked him what percentile of bishops he could beat up, so that's probably not the quality of content you want to get involved with.
Now, have there been any other podcasts that you've been on, Bishop?
Actually, I was thinking that there was. I phoned in
to
a podcast back from my home diocese.
Oh, cool. Nice.
Springfield, Illinois, the communication director, Andrew Hansen, who actually had his and his wife's wedding.
Nice.
So it was kind of a nice connection there. And so he asked me, I think it was last year, to join him. And it was delightful. They just wanted to kind of keep up with me and what was going on. And so...
What was the name of that podcast?
I can't remember.
I'll cut that out.
No free ads. If they want to have
when we see a check, we'll put their name on this podcast.
I like that. That's smart. That's savvy business.
I can't really remember. But anyway, it was fun. I enjoyed it very much, and I was amazed at how quickly the time passed.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Now, have you ever been on a podcast more than once? Like, have you been twice on the same podcast yet? All right.
I have
more history today.
We are going to set some records today. That's the plan.
So I hope to be a regular guest on this podcast.
There you go. Yeah.
Because actually, I feel like I'm in the presence of podcast greatness.
Oh, yeah. And Garrett's here, too.
Because I've been following your podcast since the beginning. I've listened to every episode, and I'm just like really, really, really impressed. A little intimidated right now, but I'm very impressed.
We've had a lot of fun. I mean, what are we? Episode 11, so we're kind of into it. We've had a lot of fun doing it. We've heard a lot of good things from different groups of people, like high school, college kids, but then also some parents and some priests and things like that. So we've enjoyed doing it as brothers. We're good. It's good to have you with us, and we'll see what the Lord does.
You know, and I was thinking, you know, in my day when I was discerning and being formed in the seminary, there was none of this existed, you know. So I was thinking how helpful that would have been to hear vocation directors and young priests just talk about their discernment and all the things that you've been covering. And I thought that would have been really, really game changing for me, I think. So,
well, thank you. Our audience continues to grow. We're hoping for the Bishop Kemi bump, the podcast phenomenon that, you know, our ratings are just going to skyrocket after like this.
Tell me if they don't. I have a little bit of an ego in all this.
Well, with that, I think we should probably get into some of the hard-hitting journalism that we are known for around about 4 o'clock. You know, we are kind of the Walter Cronkite of the Kansas vocation podcasting world. I've been called that multiple times.
Yeah,
regularly. And by the time this episode airs, it's not currently Lent, but when this sees airtime, it will be Lent. Now, growing up for me, I remember Lent Fridays. There was a steady diet of macaroni and cheese with tuna, salmon patties, and tilapia. None of those things do I eat anymore on Fridays in Lent. I don't remember disliking them as a kid, but I don't eat any of those in Lent now. So for those parents, those families that are struggling what to serve for the coming Friday of Lent, I thought we'd go over some of the things you grew up with for Lent and what's your go-to meal now on a Friday in Lent. So now, Bishop, you like to cook, correct?
I do. I enjoy cooking very much. I don't have a lot of time for it, but when I do, I really like it.
What were the usual things in the Kemi household for Fridays in Lent?
Well, I grew up on a farm, and so in the rural areas, we had salmon patties. It was a huge thing for us.
Canned salmon,
but they were fried, you know. And
you've never had a salmon patty?
No.
I never had canned salmon. I don't know what that is.
It's in a can.
It's pretty self-explanatory.
Aptly named.
It's processed salmon, you know. This was long before the days with fresh fish markets. And most of the time, tuna salad. Mm-hmm. We would have in the evening for our main meal, like fried perch, you know, fish sticks or something like that. Nothing really all that exotic. I love seafood. I love fish. And so there's not a whole lot of penitential penance for me during Lent when it comes to seafood or fish. And I think the king of seafood is salmon, a well-cooked salmon fillet. There's just nothing better. Mm. And that's why everybody knows that about me. And that's wherever I go, they always say, "Would you like salmon? Would you like salmon?" So I eat a lot of salmon, but I like it, you know. But then, of course, the fish fries, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
You cannot go wrong. There's no penance to the fish fries, but they are delicious. And my last parish that I pastored back in Illinois, we had a fish fry every Friday of Lent, except Good Friday. And the Knights of Columbus wanted to have one on Good Friday, but I said, no, that really would not be appropriate. So we had these fish fries every Friday, and I was tired of it after it was all said and done, but what a great meal.
Mm-hmm. How about you guys? What did you eat growing up? Or now that you're in charge of your own culinary destiny, where do you look for a Friday and Lent meal?
Yeah, so growing up, it was definitely a lot of fish sticks and macaroni and cheese. And so I do not have those at all anymore. I think not that I hated them growing up necessarily, just got burnt out on them maybe. So now it's honestly a lot of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Reverting.
Yes, reverting. But there's also a ton of, being in a lot of Hispanic ministry, I'll get just bean burritos or cheese quesadillas or ceviche.
Oh, I love
that
ceviche.
That is really good. I cannot do any of those things, so I rely upon the generosity of my people. But
yeah, shout out to El Tapatio. We used to always, when we were at the cathedral, we would go to El Tapatio. It's a restaurant on the north side.
Just across the street or so.
It's a few miles north.
Oh, yeah,
north,
yeah, yeah. Down north of the cathedral. They're known for their shrimp, right?
And it's a lot of seafood from the Pacific side of Mexico, and cathedral parishioners own it. So we would go there with Father Kider a lot during Fridays in general, but especially Fridays in Lent. So if you're looking for a new restaurant to try, El Tapatio during.
Are they sponsors of the podcast?
No free ads. Bleep that out. Bleep that out until they stop.
Unless, of course, they, you know, send some ceviche our way.
They've given us enough free food over the years, so I think we
I didn't know what ceviche was till about like 8 years ago.
Oh, really?
A friend of mine and I were on vacation. He's a priest, and he ordered ceviche, and I thought, what is that? Yeah. But it's delicious.
Oh, gosh. It's so good. White fish cooked in lime juice. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are you men cooks? Do you guys cook?
No. No. I will at times in the summer grill, just do hamburgers, brats, a steak or something like that. But cooking in the kitchen, in short, no.
Peter Burkamp is a seminarian living with me now. And first day he was making bacon and eggs on the stovetop. And I honestly didn't know the stovetop worked. Like, there was no context in which I would ever have used that stovetop. And he cooks every single day.
This is the deficiency in your formation.
For sure. No, I agree.
You should have come to the House of Formation. Exactly. Then you would have learned how to cook.
Peter has
Peter, who was at the House
Peter
of Formation.
Peter, who was at the House Formation, living with me now. He has fried chicken waiting for me after Saturday night mass sometimes. He leaves me a couple strips of bacon on big days, like first day of school or snow day. We had a snow day the other day, left me a couple strips of bacon.
Such pastoral chili, ministry.
It's a gift. And he does stuff with the students, too.
I don't know what he does with the students, but I know there's bacon and... Yeah.
Has he been assigned there to be the chef of the house there at St. Paul's? All
people. He has to learn. He has to learn. I never learned, so I'm trying to teach him I never got.
That's right.
But if you don't cook, what do you eat on Fridays in Lent?
It's not great. When my go-to is 3 Eggo waffles with peanut butter on it.
Also a reversion to third-grade level cookery.
But this was the worst, and this is not good, but during the pandemic at St. Isidore's, somebody gave us hundreds of personal pizzas that you put in the microwave.
Yeah.
Hundreds of them. I don't know. And so a go-to, and this is gross, but a go-to is 2 of those pizzas with some Fritos in between and a little pizza sandwich. And Father Gale would just be horrified at this.
As he should be.
But it was all, I don't know what you guys want me to do. I don't cook, so I don't have a lot of options.
So you microwave that?
Or? You microwave it before. That's okay. You don't want to microwave the Fritos. Mm-hmm. So that's an important, try that every once in a while.
See, there's an art to it, Bishop. It's not just.
So do I cook? Yes, I guess the answer is
I'm pretty sure you can order that at Taco Bell.
Really late at night. That's the only time.
Another sponsor of the podcast.
Right.
Yeah, man,
right.
We're gonna clean this up.
When I was pastor, I don't know if this is sad or lazy, but I liked it. My go-to Friday Lent meal was just a sweet potato. Like buy a giant sweet potato, nuke it, throw some butter and salt and pepper on it, and I loved it.
Sweet potatoes are not potatoes.
They're better.
Seriously, we got to get this cleared up because potatoes are only white or yellow. They're not that golden brown or sweet. Oh, I hate sweet potatoes.
Bishop is very passionate about this. There's a look on his face here.
Well, I'm very passionate about potatoes, real potatoes.
You're like John Vianney, but not as aesthetical. I will only eat a sweet potato.
With sour cream.
Yeah, that's the only thing I have in common with St. John Vianney is our passion for potatoes.
Coming in with hot takes today. 10th Bishop and sweet potatoes are not potatoes.
There's a story about John Vianney eating grass and his housemaid walks in on him. It's like, Monsignor Vianney, what are you doing? And he goes, an experiment. It's not going well. He was trying to see if he could get away with eating grass, like if that would give him the nutrients he needed.
That's a fail. Yeah. Saints don't get everything right. Well, we've helped feed the body, so it's only fitting now that we spend a little time to help feed the spirit. Now, us three priests, myself, Father Drew, Father Garrett, we're all on the vocations team for the diocese. But really, though we're the vocations teams, in actuality, we are simply your representatives, Bishop, of helping to promote vocations, helping to walk guys through, and helping to, rightly screen guys that are prepared or ready to enter into seminary. And so I thought it might be helpful if you were open to sharing a little bit about what are you looking for in a candidate for seminary? We're your representatives. What are you looking for in a young man to be a good candidate for seminary?
That's a great question. I think the first thing I should say is we're not looking, and really I think I can speak for the whole church, we're not looking for perfection, at least in the sense of human perfection, which doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes a young man maybe say, well, I'm not perfect enough or I'm not good enough. And certainly none of us are worthy of this vocation, but we're chosen. So some things, as I was thinking about this in preparation for the podcast, that there's many things we're looking for, of course, but fundamentally, I would think it would be wonderful to see in a young man presenting himself for discernment or formation in the seminary, and then eventually, hopefully, if it's God's will, to be ordained. Docility is something that I really see as very important. This desire to be formed and desire to be taught. And that docility is really important, I think, in leaders today of all various kinds and degrees. I see that as a very important quality that I would be looking for. Coupled with that would then be humility. And humility is not denigrating oneself. It's really knowing oneself. And it's being grounded in that truth of who you are and who God has created you to be. And you don't have to be anybody else but who God created you to be. And that kind of humility is powerful because it makes us truly authentic. And in my time as a priest, now almost 36 years and almost 8 years as a bishop, what I think goes a long way in leadership in the church and outside the church is that sense of an authentic self, which really means a truly humble person, recognizing the truth of who he or she is and relishing that, glorifying God in that, and then, you know, sharing that with people around you. So those are the two things. Oh, there's one other thing that I was thinking of before I let you guys jump in on this. I don't want to be the only one speaking today, but
people would gladly listen to you for the whole podcast.
I don't think so. And this is, I think, also very important, is the desire to be virtuous.
Yeah.
Virtue is a strength, living a virtuous life, and there are many different virtues, but having that inner desire to pursue a life of virtue. No one is ever finished with, you know, we're not all completely virtuous all the time, but if we have a desire to continually seeking a virtuous life and living a life with a clean heart, with a right mind and, you know, appropriate relationships and healthy relationships, those kind of things I think are very, very powerful. And if a priest demonstrated those three qualities and average intelligence, I think we've got a winner.
So often how I describe Father Drew, average intelligence.
There's a priest of our diocese who said he got on a recommendation form from the seminary, dumb but social. That was
sufficient. I tell the guys.
He's a priest, grand priest.
I tell the guys, I'd much rather have a holy pastor than a smart pastor. Yeah. If it comes down to those two things, I want the holy one.
I love that, what you express, Bishop, because, okay, I know who I am. I know like my base identity, worth, dignity. And so then humility goes along with that because I'm not afraid to acknowledge my strengths. Like I'm not nervous to acknowledge my strengths or my weaknesses. And then I can be docile because I can take risks and I'm not worried about being critiqued and I'm not worried about being nudged in one way or another because I know what my foundation is. That can't be shattered. It's when I don't know what my base is. I don't know my basic identity and worth that I get real defensive if people are critiquing the way I do things, the way I am. I don't want to go after virtue because that implies that I have some work to be done. And so you got to build from the base up and you can tell when a man knows who he is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, when we get ready to ordain and the fundamental question I said, do I know who this man is? Do I really know, as he presented himself, has he allowed himself to be known by us, by those who are in charge of his formation, his vocation directors, his bishop and others? Because if I can't say I know this man, then there's a real problem there. And then either the formation or discernment hasn't really worked in this case. So,
why is docility so important in leadership in your experience? So you've experienced now intense leadership for these last few years. Why do you think it's so important for a seminarian and a priest?
I think it's absolutely important because no one of us has all the answers. And to pretend like we do is presenting a false self, I think. So a truly docile person is one who can admit that I have more questions than I have answers.
Yep.
And that's okay. It's certainly okay to say I have more questions than answers. I can say it with all truthfulness. You know, I mean, I've been appointed to be the bishop of this diocese. Sometimes marvel at how that all happened, but I wake up in the morning with more questions than answers. But I also think that their docility is this desire to say, I'm going to look for answers. I'm going to look for those who can help me to answer some of the big questions of our times and the direction we want to take as a diocese. So a leader with true docility recognizes he or she cannot lead alone. And I believe that's essential for us as priests and as bishops. None of us lead by ourselves. We lead collaborating with many, many others. So
it reminds me of a great office quote from Michael Scott. And this is I had the great honor to preach at the first mass for Father Hayden Charles, just a couple of years younger and a good friend through seminary. I mean, I referenced this and I gave him this as a picture to put in his office. It's Michael Scott. And he says, I knew exactly what I was doing. But in a much more real sense, I had no idea what I was doing. And that just speaks to that, having more questions than answers. Mm-hmm. And there's no, in Michael Scott, there's no duplicity in him. And so right. He just says it. But that's a lot healthier to know that and to admit that and then just live out of that and say, I can depend on other people and I don't need to have all the answers to be a good and holy priest. It's actually better if I admit that I don't, and then I can rely on other people.
I love saying this because it's so true. When I was first ordained, you guys will find this very hard to believe, but I was pretty self-confident.
No.
And yeah, but here's how I describe it. I had answers to all the questions nobody was asking.
You're just like, you're describing the docility is my experience of my first 7 months as a pastor of like, I don't think I know what I'm doing here. And I always express that to Father Ken, my spiritual director. And a lot of times I'll be in like, but I'll probably know what I'm doing by Christmas. Then I'll probably know. And he's like, what are you talking about, man? Nope. That's the experience of life, of priesthood, of leadership in general. Can I recognize that that's an okay thing? I don't need to be nervous about that. If I know my identity and if I've got people around me, if I've got a support system of people above me and people on the same level as me, keeping an eye on me.
I love, Bishop, that you mentioned that docility of spirit, because one of the yellow flags that pops up sometimes when a guy comes in and he's looking at going into seminary, applying. So he sits down and he starts telling me what type of priest he's going to be. Mm-hmm. And he's got very determined ideas. And it's almost like he's telling me what type of priest I need to be, which I still have a lot to learn, granted. But it demonstrates a lack of docility or a lack of formability that you don't even know what you don't know yet. And so it always makes me nervous when a guy comes in and I'll start saying, well, have you thought about it this way? And he's already got an answer and he explains to me why his answer is right. I'm like, okay, all right. That makes me nervous.
I would say that's not a yellow flag. That's a red flag.
Yeah, you're right.
That's
right.
A red flag, because it really, you know, speaks to somebody who's really convinced of his own intelligence. And, you know, life is, I can assure you, life and the experiences of life and being a priest and leadership in the church, there's so much more to learn and so much more to come. And if you're really docile and open to that, you will learn it. And experience will teach us so many things. I am a different priest today and a bishop than I was 30 years ago. I'm a much, much different person. But if docility hadn't been there, and I kind of like to think I'm docile, I could have blocked all that. You know, I could have been convinced of my own, you know, superiority and, you know, I've got the answers and this is the way that we need to go in the church. But everything is evolving and changing, and we need to do that along with our people.
Bishop, would you mind sharing maybe some of those ways in 36 years of priesthood you find yourself different than early in priesthood or maybe within the episcopacy, maybe not, but particularly as a priest?
Well, one of the big ways is that obviously pastors, bishops, we have authority, but that authority has to be exercised in collaboration with those around us. And in many things, we have to make ultimate decisions, but we can't and shouldn't ever decide solely on our own without collaborating, without taking advice from a lot of different people in different areas. I think a really wise pastor, priest, or bishop really opens himself up to lots of collaboration and helping, bringing others to that. Then I think the best decisions are made, not in isolation, not because I have the authority to make it. My authority, yes, it comes from the Pope and, you know, from the church, but it, when I exercise it in collaboration with others, then it's real authority. It's a apostolic authority, I think. So it's really Catholic.
And that feels like the opposite of initially what I would think of. What am I looking for in a young man, possibly a priest? First, my first reaction is someone that can speak well, that can preach, that can communicate. Those things are important. But if I am hearing you right, it's as maybe more important that they can listen well before that they could speak and communicate well.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a good way. It's a quality of a docile person, that they are comfortable enough listening, and not just listening with their ears, but also listening with their heart. Our people have a lot to tell us and they have a lot to teach us. And if we're really docile, then we would take the time and have the, you know, this desire to really listen closely. I believe that's important for me as a bishop, to listen to the priests that I work with, you know, all of you and all in the diocese, to really help me to be a better bishop, to really listen closely to our priests and then to the lay faithful. That's why I love doing pastoral visits in our parishes. Although it's a brief time in a parish, it's amazing how many people will stop you and tell you things, you know, and give you a little insight into the life of that parish, or kind of maybe their struggles or what's happening in their lives. They have an intense desire to share that with their bishop. And it's wonderful. Sometimes it's just a little overwhelming, honestly, because there's so many, but it's really heartening to me that people trust me enough that they entrust some of the deep things in their heart. So I believe there's a lot to learn and more to come in all of that regards.
I think that's really helpful, I hope, for young men to hear, because I'll experience this a lot, that guys shy away from the priesthood, not even just for like celibacy and things like that, but public speaking, being in front of people, public person, that type of stuff. And you've been at the forefront of expressing a desire for greater preaching and a greater emphasis on that. Absolutely. But that this listening, so many of these men are great listeners. Maybe they're quieter guys. Maybe they're learning when you're 16, 17, 21, you're learning so many of those things. Okay, but that's a better quality than, hey, can I get up and wheel and deal and shake hands and kiss babies and do all of that?
That's a skill. You can learn that.
You can learn that. You absolutely can learn those. And so you may have more talent, but docility, that's something that you can have. That's something that's in your heart that maybe a priest is noticing and has spoken into your heart more so than a lot of these other public things.
Yeah. I think it's also a requirement for prayer. To be truly docile, to be content and at peace with sitting and listening to the Lord and the contemplation and meditation and Lectio Divina and all those things that we practice, hopefully every day. But just to have that willingness to allow the Lord to speak, that's, I think, the first requirement of a great preacher. It's from that, then we really have something to say. Mm-hmm. I recognize, you know, that I'm not smart enough. I'm not clever enough to preach. It's really what the Lord is trying to speak through me. But I do, you mentioned it, Father Drew, I just have this great desire for a renaissance in preaching in the church today and in this diocese in particular. I think preaching is something we all can approach with more importance. It is, I think, the way that we're going to be able to reach the most people with the word.
What are some qualities? We're getting a little off track. What are some qualities of a great preacher or even a great homily? Like you hear a great homily. What are a couple of qualities of that or someone you experience as a great preacher?
I think it's absolutely rooted in the word. I mean, that's the Lord's word. It's not ours. We're just communicating the word. So it's really something that has to be biblical, founded in the word of God. I think it's also important that it be relatable, that it be relevant, that it really speaks to human experience as much as possible. And then because attention spans are so short these days, I think it has to be very concise. And I don't even know what the word would be. I'm not saying short. I'm just saying very well-crafted. And it's like an arrow that goes right to the heart of the listener. That's what I think is the most effective kind of preaching.
It takes longer to write a short homily than a long homily, absolutely, in my experience.
Everything you just mentioned is super doable for everybody. Like, nothing you just mentioned has anything to do with a natural talent, like funny or energized or things like that. And that may be a part of a guy's preaching style and things like that. But all those things that you mentioned, those are things that a young man or one of us, we can do relating to other people. That's something that everybody has the ability to do. Prayer and working out with the word. Oh, that's something we all have the ability to do. Working on it so that it's concise. I mean, those are all qualities that all of us can have, not just, hey, that guy's a great public speaker. That's a different type of thing.
It is. Yeah, it's not just public speaking. Those are qualities, they're skills that you can hone, and people have their own techniques and everything. But when I listen to preaching, I don't get to listen to preachers very often because usually they always want the bishop to preach, which I think is a poverty for me and for others. But when I do have a rare opportunity to listen to preaching, I'm looking for somebody that's real, you know, that this is real. This is a real message that not only is for me, but it has really impacted the preacher. And then to hear in, and it's more than just technique, but to hear in their words a real passion for what they're saying. Yeah. That, I think, makes all the difference.
And it starts, as you said, Bishop, with that docility to the Lord, that docility in prayer, which is, again, why it's so important for a guy that's looking at seminary applicant that he can show himself to be docile. Because if he cannot be docile in seminary and to vocations and to bishop, it's probably also a sign he's not docile in his prayer and he's not allowing the Lord to lead him. He's trying to lead the Lord. It starts with that docility, and that will also be where we stop for today. So, thank you so much for being with us, Bishop.
Thank you. We'll
leave it there. You'll stick around and we'll do one more episode, set another record for today, two episodes in the same podcast for you. So this has been another episode of About 4 o'clock. Thank you for listening. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. Our final word today from one of the saints, Bishop is going to be generous enough to provide for us.
Yes, I was. So I have many, many, many favorite saints, far too many probably, but I love the saints, the lives of the saints. One of the church's newest saints I've been very, very taken by is Blessed Carlo Acutis.
Oh, yeah.
We're calling him the millennial saint. He only lived to be 15. He died of, leukemia. But in this short life, he really had a great love for the Eucharist. So he's a very spiritual young man. And he, you know, in this year of the Eucharist here in the Diocese of Wichita, I'm asking him to intercede for us to really deepen the love and the devotion and understanding he had for the Eucharist, to deepen that in each of our lives. So he said something very, very simple, but I think also very profound. Can you imagine a 15-year-old saying that? He said that the Eucharist is my highway to heaven. He went to daily mass. He promoted Eucharistic miracles. He said the Eucharist is my highway to heaven. And sure enough, it is. It is a highway for all of us to the eternal life. So Blessed Carlo Acutis, pray for us.
Amen. Thank you, Bishop. And we will see you next week.